CNN is the victor in round one of a legal battle with the Trump administration. This morning, a judge ordered the administration to reinstate reporter Jim Acosta's White House press pass. The White House had revoked it after the president and Acosta clashed in a press conference last week.
And tomorrow, President Trump visits victims of the California wildfires after seeming to blame the state for the damage from those fires. The death toll there continues to rise. The number of missing is well over 600. And of course, the Florida recount continues today. So let's convene our Friday Politics Roundtable. Joining us, Jose Diaz-Balart, news anchor at Telemundo and NBC. He joins us from Miami. Hi, Jose.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And Chad Pergram, he covers Congress for Fox News, joins us from Washington. Hi, Chad.
Thank you for having me.
Chad, I think your name has just been so relevant in the last couple weeks. I think of hanging Chads and the recount.
Oh, boy, here we go again.
But I do want to start, though.
Hanging Chads.
Hanging Chads. I want to start with the
card aggregate. Yes.
Anyway, I want to start, though, with this judge's decision, which, you know, came out just today, that CNN, you know, is claiming victory. But, Chad, your thoughts on that? Your network, Fox News, sided with CNN in this lawsuit. And the judge made his decision based on the Fifth Amendment, the right of due process. Not the First Amendment.
And that's where, you know, there's going to have to be a written status report on this by Monday. We may see them back in court next week. But this temporary restraining order grants him access for the next couple of weeks here. And if you read the specific things that Judge Timothy Kelly said from the bench, I will grant the application for the temporary restraining order. I order the government reinstate the pass.
Yeah.
And so that's for now. But then, you know, it depends what happens later. And, you know, I have a little bit of personal experience with this. You know, I for many years worked. I was on the Radio TV Correspondents Association board here at the Capitol. It's a separate set of credentialing that we deal with up here. And so, you know, generally there has been allegiance between the RTCA and the White House Correspondents Association on these issues of access. But, you know, that's an issue that's come up here at the Capitol from time to time, maybe not as high profile, but it is an issue here about who gets in and when, you know, to have access to the Capitol and to government.
Well, Jose,
interesting
that
the judge was appointed by President Trump.
Right. But let me ask you, Jose, do you worry that since he made the decision on the Fifth Amendment right to due process, he said there wasn't really a process here. It was just, you know, finicky. Not the First Amendment right to free speech and press, that the White House could just come up with a process and then ban the same reporter.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they're even considering that, because this is, I think, plays right into President Trump's agenda. I think that the fact that he chose Jim Acosta during that news conference, knowing that Jim Acosta is a guy who asks very tough questions, is part of the process of Trump and his administration. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember that in July of 2015, when candidate Trump went to the border of Laredo to tour, there was a, you know, press conference that he had just briefly there. I raised my hand. He knew who I was. He chose me first because he knew probably what I was going to ask him. And then he shut me down immediately. Mm-hmm. I think that this is, you know, the president's going to look for another way to continue this issue, because I think he really likes to be seen as confrontational with the press. And I think that's very dangerous.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
And let's turn to your elections now, just while we have time, because we could talk about the media, I think, forever probably, and what happens at the news conferences. The Republican in Florida, Ron DeSantis, looks like the winner in the governor's race. The Senate race is still being decided. Mark Walter, in a hearing yesterday, said this about the recount. He said, "We have been the laughingstock of the world, election after election, and we chose not to fix this." Jose, and then maybe Chad, how did we get here yet again?
You know, I'm a Florida resident, and I love Florida. I was born and raised in South Florida. I just can't figure out how it can be an embarrassment over and over and over again. 2000 was 18 years ago, and yet here we are today with a situation where we can't, you know, some voting places can't even hand in their ballots on time.
So, Chad, this is a live question. I mean, how does it happen?
Well, you know, there was a lot of criticism here from Capitol Hill, some bipartisan, but I remember Patrick Leahy, the Democrat from Vermont, saying, you know, that they wanted to give more money to elections boards, you know, in local races and things, to be able to have better systems, to be able to tabulate the ballots more accurately. Some of that money went forth to try to protect the election. Some of that was because of pressure, maybe Russian meddling from the 2016 election. But there was more that people thought that should be done. And, you know, the Constitution, when it comes to federal office, you know, for House and and Senate races, it says an issue of time, place, and manner. Manner, that's why you have different, you know, election times and methods of voting, you know, paper ballots, electronic voting, voting by mail. And when you defer that to the states, which the Constitution is pretty clear and explicit about, you're going to have different systems. And so that's why, you know, one state might do it really well. And here we are again with Florida.
Well, you know, others are saying we might have to have different expectations. It's not like the old days where you had election night. It is election night and then the days after where ballots come in because there's so many different things to be counted now. But what I want to ask what you think, Chad, of the fact of how much our own leaders are dissing this system that makes us the pride of the world, you know, that we elect, freely elect our
leaders.
And
that's the irony. You know, how often do you see political leaders here, you know, former presidents? I know Jimmy Carter has done this a number of times, and even congressional leaders, where they go someplace overseas to be election monitors, some places having new elections. And yet here we are in Florida. You know, Porter County, Indiana had trouble.
Well, I'm saying, I mean, you know, with President Trump claiming that people are voting multiple times, getting back in their cars and changing and using disguises. Here's a minority leader, Chuck Schumer.
Mr. President, name one. Name a few. Where did it happen and when? Or did you just read this on some right-wing, nasty, dishonest blog and just repeat it?
And then we also have to add that this week, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, you know, some rumors about a presidential run for him, said that if the Georgia Democratic candidate Stacey Abrams doesn't win the governor's race there, it's because Republicans stole that election. I mean, the president has gone above and beyond with his criticism of the system that should be sacred. Is that damaging, Jose?
I think it's really damaging. I think that when you have the president and also political leaders say things like that without one shred of evidence, it damages. It damages this system, which with all of its flaws is still no doubt the best system in the world for representative democracy.
We should mention that California Congressman Kevin McCarthy was elected this week to lead Republicans in the House, and he had a warning for his fellow members of the GOP.
We took a beating inside the suburban areas. We're going to have to work harder. I think our message is going to have to be clearer. Our ideas are going to have to be stronger. We realize that, and we will work towards that effort.
90% of Republicans in the upcoming Congress are white men, and there's debate within the GOP over why they lost. Conservatives say that they didn't do what they promised, for instance, building a wall. I wonder what you both think of this. Jose, you first.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think that what is the unsung story here is the Latino vote in 2018. And the fact is that, you know, every month in this country, 66,000 U.S.-born Latinos turn 18 years of age. And when they get mobilized and they decide to register and vote, it's going to change things. And you want to talk about getting beaten. Look at how the Latinos voted in Texas, for example. Very, very close race for Senator Cruz. And I think the closeness was, among other things, because of the young Latino vote.
And to add to Jose's point there, it's not so much just the Latino vote in Texas or Florida or someplace else, but it was the fact that you had Latinos and Democratic votes in the suburbs, in red states. Look at who lost in Texas. John Culberson, a Republican from suburban Houston. Look at Pete Sessions, the chairman of the Rules Committee, who lost in suburban Dallas. You certainly saw that in Northern Virginia, Barbara Comstock losing. The fact that in most cases, Virginia is not a red state, but that Democrats were able to get into those suburbs in red states and red areas, that's the real problem for the Republican Party in the long term. And you certainly saw it play in Texas.
Chad Pergrin, we just saw it in Orange County, California last night. Late results, the Democrat Katie Porter declared the winner over the two-term Republican Mimi Walters. That means Democrats have captured three out of the four congressional seats in that, you know, this is Reagan country. And they're saying a fourth still undecided race there could also go Democratic. So there's your point.
Yeah, that's precisely it. And that's why the Democrats did so well. And keep in mind why they did well in those areas. Some of it was because of the tax plan, something that they moved through Congress, not really popular in some quarters in California, yet Republicans in the House voted for it. And again, there was the Trump backlash. President Trump has generally not been very popular in the suburbs. And it was this fealty on behalf of some Republicans in Congress, you know, kind of kowtowing to the president, maybe not doing appropriate oversight. People who were opposed to him then got on board once he got elected. That kind of turned against those Republicans in those suburban districts.
And in California, Jeff Denham, the congressman, lost there. Republican, pro-immigration reform, really been fighting on that, and he lost.
Okay, we just want to make one last note. We got less than a minute here. Elvis is among the Americans receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Trump today, joining Babe Ruth, Utah Republican Orrin Hatch, the last Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, the late, rather, Supreme Court Justice, and Miriam Adelson, the philanthropist wife of Trump donor and casino magnate Sheldon Adelson. We're getting a sense of where President Trump wants to honor Americans, and it gives us a chance to play Elvis. Jose Diaz-Balart, news anchor at Telemundo and NBC. Chad Pergram, Fox News senior.
Let's get Kachow a Medal of Freedom. Kachow, creator of the Mambo.
Chad, Jose, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
You
thanks.
Too.
This is Here and Now.
Tomorrow will be too late. It's not.